99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Live on the Fly with Randy Credico coming up.
Hey, Anton Karas, the third man. Hello, everybody. I'm Randy Credico. This is Randy Credico Live on the Fly here on 99.5 FM in New York City, WBAI, WBAI.org if you're streaming. And if you want to support the station, it's give to WBAI. We still have some books left of the Assange count, In Defense of Assange. If you'd like to get that for a $50 donation, autographed by Margaret Ratner, one of the editors, along with Tariq Ali. It's 212-209-2950. Okay, I got to get right into the show because I was going to do Reality Winner's Mother today and Daniel Hale, but Ramsey Clark passed over the weekend, and I have no other choice. I love this guy. The world loved him. He was one of the greatest, and I was really shooken up. I did not know he was sick. At any rate, we've got two special guests on today to talk about. Now, you've read all the obituaries about Ramsey Clark, and people at the station know everything about him, all the great work he's done for 55, 60 years. The humanity, the personality, the man himself, I got two people on today that knew him, have known him, for worked with him since the 70s, and they are Abdeen Jabara, the civil rights attorney, and Detective Frank Serpico, ex-Detective Frank Serpico, who happens, it's his birthday today. So I want to thank both of them for being on the show today, and I'm going to go to you first, Abdeen. When did you meet in Ramsey, and tell us what attracted you to him?
Well, I've been involved in the Palestine support work for many years. I was practicing law in Detroit, and I got an extradition case where a Palestinian in Chicago was arrested by the American authorities on the basis of an extradition request from Israel. He was accused of a terrorist act, what they called a terrorist act, and was being held in Chicago. And I flew to Chicago, and I, along with my dear friend Jim Fennerty, we represented him in an extradition hearing, and then went through the process of appeal to the district court, and then had to file for a review in the Court of Appeals. And it was at that point we thought, well, we need some gravitas. We need to have somebody here who will have some standing in front of the court. And someone suggested to me that I contact Ramsey Clark, who was at the time practicing in New York City. So I called Ramsey Clark in New York and flew in and told him about the case, and he said, okay, I'll argue the case for you. Never, ever once mentioned any monetary remuneration or anything. So that's when I first met him, after I talked to him in New York, and he argued that case in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago, and I only recently learned from Ramsey in the last several years that one of the judges who sat on that court saw him in the hallway and said to him, Ramsey, your father would be ashamed of you. I was shocked. I was shocked when I heard that. And because I, you know, I was there with him at the time of that argument, and he never mentioned anything. Well, years went by. I then became the president of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee in Washington. I moved, closed my practice and moved to Washington. And we got another extradition case in of a Palestinian again, but this was in New York. And I called Ramsey about this, and sure enough, he came in and represented the gentleman. And I didn't have much contact with him during that whole period of time. But after I left the position in Washington and I moved back to Michigan, I got a phone call from Ramsey one day, and he said, Abdeen, I'd like to see if you can come and help me find somebody to represent Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, who was on being charged with conspiracy against the United States, along with a number of other people. So I came to New York, and we, you know, worked together, and then Lynn Stewart came in, and she was the attorney that was representing the Sheikh. We brought her in, as well as myself. And I had also met this fabulous woman who, in Philadelphia, I was introduced to her by Noam Chomsky's sister-in-law, and she was a law professor in New York. And so I moved to New York, ultimately married this wonderful woman, and I worked in Ramsey's office on the Sheikh's case for several years. And that's how I really got to know Ramsey on a very personal basis.
All right. We continue talk about him as an individual. I want to go to Frank Serpico, Paco. Happy birthday, Frank. Frank, how did you first meet Ramsey Clark?
Well, it's interesting because it seems Ramsey's life is so doesn't change. I met him also when I had to testify before the Knapp Commission. Investigating corruption in the New York City Police Department, which I had exposed. And I don't know who, I do, but it doesn't matter. Somebody got a hold of Ramsey, and Ramsey offered to represent me pro bono. And as we're walking in, you know, some journalist looking for, you know, his little cheap bit, Mr. Clark, why does Serpico have a lawyer? And he says, first he said, why does Serpico have a lawyer? And he says, whatever. The bottom thing was, the journalist said, then why are you here? And Ramsey said, so he can say what he has to say without being interrupted. And I felt like, wow, that was the wind in my back, you know. And I want to say, you know, that Ramsey is an unpretentious man of principle and moral character. And in everything he does, he speaks the truth that many in power do not want to hear. And so they try and make him the bad guy, like this guy, your father, Bull Twinkies. His father would have been proud of him. And because Ramsey, his home was a harbor. He shared it with many a weary pilgrim and all victims of injustice. I remember when I would, to go back and catch up, you know, Ramsey and I, we remained friends because he lived in the village. He lived over on 12th Street, and I lived on Perry Street. And mentioning that, Ramsey was the kind of guy, I mean, being who he was, and you could find his name in a phone book. And I remember times I'd be sitting in his house by myself, and the phone would ring. And you wouldn't believe the people that called there asking for assistance. And if you came at night, you had to step over bodies. He had people, it was like the United Nations, people of every color, nationality, and religion. He was just an amazing... I got to be careful. I don't, you know.
You don't, I understand. I mean, I get choked up thinking about it, too. Abdeen,
yes.
Give us some more insight on his personality and character.
Well,
and commitment.
I'm going to give you some insight. You know, a friend of mine just told me a story about Ramsey and his father. Ramsey was the chairperson of the American Civil Liberties Union National Advisory Board, and he was supposed to give a speech one night to this advisory board, and Ramsey couldn't do it, so Tom Clark, his father, former Supreme Court Justice, filled in for Ramsey. And this friend of mine went up to Tom Clark, and he says, Mr. Chief Justice, he wasn't Chief Justice, Mr. Justice Clark, you know, I'm one of Ramsey's former law partners, and I want to know, how do you feel about Ramsey? I mean, here he is. He's gone off on this very, you know, progressive stint and is involved in all of these controversial causes. And you know, that doesn't really comport with your conservative background. And he said to him, he said, well, I'm a chip off the old block, meaning that he and Ramsey were, he was so proud of Ramsey. And that really said something, because you have to understand that Ramsey got appointed to be the AG, Attorney General, and his father resigned from the Supreme Court so that there wouldn't be a conflict. And so that the first black member of the Supreme Court could be appointed, Thurgood Marshall. And that is real history. That is real history.
Well, Ramsey was very good on race. He said this, that the abolition of the U.S. prison system as we know it must be done. This is way back when he was Attorney General. He met with the family of James Cheney after he and Andrew Goodman and Michael Schwerner were murdered. So did he ever talk about that, Frank?
Not only did he meet with them, but James Cheney's brother came to work for Ramsey in his office, and he worked there for when I was there, Ben Cheney. A wonderful, wonderful human being. Unfortunately, he had a stroke, but Ramsey went and brought in Ben Cheney, and he was part and parcel of the whole family, the legal office. And Ramsey's involvement in the whole civil rights struggle is historic. I mean, it was so incredible that Nixon. Actually, when he was running against Herbert Humphrey, used Ramsey's uncompromising attachment to civil rights to attack LBJ and to attack the Democratic Party. And it was partly because of that. That Nixon was elected, because he ran against the incredible record of Ramsey Clark.
You know, Mike Wallace said that there was only one man not afraid to stand up to J. Edgar Hoover, and that was Ramsey Clark. You know, it was Ramsey, right, as Attorney General, who refused to permit wiretapping of black liberation leader Stokely Carmichael. I want to go to you, Serpico. You, Frank, you remained friends with him way up until recently. So how did you stay in contact? Did you spend
time?
Well,
when I went down to the city, I would drop in on them. And also when they were doing a documentary, I wanted to get that documentary out because I just thought it was something that had to be done. And I became executive producer, I think, or something, and to raise funds. So, until I had spoke to him when he was about to get his second COVID shot, and he sounded fantastic, you know. And every time I would call, he would say, "Paco." And I'd say, "How you doing, Ramsey?" And he said, "Oh, much better now that I hear your voice." And it was an interesting thing because, you know, as he was, again, at 94, he was very sharp. But, you know, there's some things you start to forget. But the thing that would get him going all the time was we traveled together as well, and I did some work for him. And we were in Holland, and we had to go to Sweden. And I had a ram, and we were outside in the field, and I bent over, and which you don't do in front of a ram. And that ram sent me flying, and I was so mad. I was looking for some, I was going to crown that ram. And I turned around, and I look at the ram. His name was Bucky. And I said, "Bucky." And Ramsey never forgot that. Every time I would go into his office when I'd come back, he'd say, "Where's Bucky?"
That's
and even in these last days, you know, he would, you just mentioned Bucky, and he would start to chuckle. But unfortunately, he had that accident and cut his life short, I guess.
Quite a guy, Abdeen. In terms of his, the body of work here, there is a great obit by Gloria DeRiva, who produced the documentary "Genocide by Sanctions: The Case of Iraq." It's about Ramsey. He was very committed to human rights around the world and anti-war.
Well, Randy. We cannot do justice to Ramsey Clark in this short program.
Of course not.
So I would like to urge the listeners. There are two books that have been written. One, the most recent one, is called "Defending the Public Enemy," and it's by Professor Lonnie Brown at the law school at the University of Georgia, published by Yale University Press. I urge people to get that book, "Defending the Public Enemy," and I contacted Lonnie Brown and told him that Ramsey had died, and he sent me back an email, and he said, "Knowing Ramsey changed my life." I was so moved by that email, I passed it on to the family. There's another book that deals with both Ramsey and his father, also written by a law professor, Alexander Wohl. And the book is called "Father, Son, and the Constitution." So if there are any listeners out there that really want to know a lot about Ramsey, because we cannot begin to even scratch the surface.
Well, listen, I only had a half hour show today, so a 25 minute show. So, but I had to do something. I know I really wanted to focus on the man, his humanity. I've got like 5 minutes left. I want to, Frank, any other personal story you can tell us in 3 minutes about Ramsey, and I'll let Abdeen close it.
Well, just real short just to show what kind of man he was. And no one witnessed this but myself. We were sitting in his apartment, and he had this little boy there, a little black kid, and his father had just been killed in an accident. And Ramsey was consoling this little child, and he went to the back room and came out with a little box, and he gave the kid his Attorney General's shield, which is the highest police officer's shield in the land. And I tell you, I wanted to grab it from that kid, but that's the kind of guy that he gives this little kid his Attorney General's shield. And that's the character in him. And then the man that he was, he would not take aspirin. He was coming back from Kuwait. He tripped in the airport, and his knee was swollen up like a basketball, and made it back to the office. He had an appointment, and Bobby Schwartz got him to go to the doctor. His kneecap was shattered, and this man came all the way from Kuwait, and just one tough Marine. That's who he was, one good man. And he defended America's honor by exposing its injustice. That's what people don't want to understand.
Right. Abdeen, any personal story that you'd like to share with us?
Yes. I have a framed piece of sheet music that I was going to take to Ramsey before I learned that he'd fallen at home and it was in the hospital. It is of a song that he used to sing to me when I'd go over there, and it's a famous song that's from Texas, and it's called Cigarettes and Whiskey.
And Wild Wild Women.
Cigarettes and Whiskey and Wild Wild Women. They'll drive you crazy. They'll drive you insane. And he was so wonderful. I'm telling you, the days that I spent with him and enjoyed his absolutely marvelous sense of humor and his kinship with humankind. It was just one of the things that has really also changed my life. And I'm so grateful that I had that fabulous experience.
And you and Frank, through Ramsey, got to know each other,
right? And happy birthday.
Say hello to each other.
Happy birthday.
Oh, hi, Dean.
Okay, well, wonderful to have you on this program with me. You know, I called you up several times while Ramsey was in the hospital to give you his news. And I tried to reach out to other friends because I know that they would want to know what was happening. And we are now part of trying to help purvey the legacy that he left.
Absolutely. Yes.
Frank, you got the closing minute here.
Well, I never think there'll be another man like him. He's the most unpretentious and just a regular Texan. I would say he was a long drink of water that cast a long shadow, and he affected everybody's life that he ever touched. And I hope we never forget what he's done for this country, humanity, and injustice.
Well, I actually got another minute left here. So, Abdeen, I'm going to let you close this with one last minute. Any words you'd like to convey?
Well, we're in the process of trying to put together a memorial for Ramsey, which we will announce. And we're looking for a venue here in New York. And I'm working with the family on this, and I think that it will be a glorious occasion where he can be celebrated and honored, and I just hope that Americans really come to understand him for the greatness that he was and the greatness that he helped to provide for this country.
How do people, if they want to reach you through email, they want to suggest a location for the memorial?
Well, we're examining several locations right now. I went by St. Mark's Church yesterday and took photographs and sent it off to the family. And there were several other locations that we're looking at, but we want this to be a fitting memorial for a great man.
All right. I want to thank go ahead. You got 30 seconds, Serpico. I'm going to get in trouble with Reggie.
You better ask Ramsey's approval, because Ramsey never liked the limelight. He knows who he was. He knows what he did. And, yes, we have to keep his memory alive so that our children and our children's children know that such a man existed. Thanks, Adim, for the work you've done with Ramsey and supported him. I know you were there when he needed you, and I really appreciate that.
All right. I want to thank both of you guys today. You made this a very special show. I'm Randy Credico. This is Randy Credico, Live on the Fly. We've been speaking to Abdeen Jabbar, civil rights attorney, and the birthday boy, Mr. Frank Serpico. All right, see you Saturday at 6 p.m. Was killing my country. Solitary sadness comes over me.
For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. The Washington County, Minnesota Attorney's Office will charge former Brooklyn Center Police Officer Kim Potter with second-degree manslaughter today in the death of Dante Wright. Her body camera footage shows Potter yelled, "Taser," but fired her service weapon, killing the 20-year-old Wright as he tried to get back into his car during a traffic stop Sunday afternoon. Potter had been with Brooklyn Center Police for 26 years before she submitted her resignation on Tuesday. Tim Gannon, who'd been Brooklyn Center's chief of police until he also resigned on Tuesday, said during a press conference earlier this week that he believed the shooting was accidental. The trial of Derek Chauvin continued today, with the defense's medical expert testifying that the former officer kneeling on George Floyd's neck did not play a critical role in the 46-year-old's death last May. David Fowler, a former Maryland chief medical examiner, testified, quote, that of all of Floyd's injuries were in areas that Chauvin's knee did not press on. His testimony came after a motion for Chauvin's acquittal was denied by Judge Peter Cahill, who heard attorney Eric Nelson's argument that the prosecution has failed to provide sufficient evidence, end quote. A U.S. Capitol Police officer has been cleared of criminal wrongdoing for fatally shooting at Air Force veteran Ashley Babbitt as she attempted to breach a set of doors deep in the U.S. Capitol during the January siege, federal prosecutors announced today. Authorities determined there was insufficient evidence to prove Babbitt's civil rights were violated and that it was reasonable for the officer to believe he was firing in self-defense or in defense of members of Congress. A new report by the Capitol Police's watchdog reveals officials knew Congress was the target of the deadly January 6th insurrection, yet officers were instructed to refrain from deploying a more aggressive response. Officials on duty on January 6th said the use of crowd control equipment, such as stun grenades, could have helped push back the rioters. The report will be the subject of a Capitol Hill hearing on Thursday. U.S. federal health agencies are recommending pausing the use of Johnson & Johnson's single-dose COVID-19 vaccine after six recipients developed a rare disorder involving blood clots. The FDA and the CDC will stop using the vaccine at several sites and are urging states to do as well while they examine the safety issues. The vast majority of the nation's vaccine supply comes from Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna, which together deliver more than 23 million doses a week of their two-shot vaccines. The House Judiciary Committee today plans to hold the first ever markup of H.R. 40, the Commission to Study and Develop Reparations.